All right, so.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interview with Rebecca Gilmore, Linda Lynn, around 10:10 a.m. So basically, I talked with Karen, and you know, I don't know a whole lot about the Mormon Church. So she was doing a lot of teaching me, you know, the words like the ward, the branches, stakes, that kind of thing. And one of the things that we did was to talk about the structure, the organizational structure. And I wanted to see, you know, do I have this totally wrong? Because I realized after I wrote up my notes that I have a lot of holes in them, where when the two of us were talking, it felt like I, you know, I understood it then.
So, yeah, so these are all the auxiliaries.
Okay,
so
those are called the auxiliary groups?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so these are all the auxiliaries.
So then this is not an actual group. That's the name of it.
Yeah,
okay.
And then, yeah, you have the Young Men's Program. So, yeah, you have the Men's Program, the Relief Society, and that's, yeah.
So the Men's Program doesn't have a name like the Relief Society?
Well, it's the Elders Quorum. The church is divided up into two, as in the Old Testament, into two priesthoods. So there's the Melchizedek priesthood, and then there's the Aaronic priesthood.
Okay.
And the older men, actually it's divided up into three. They have the young men. So mostly the young men, you get the priesthood when you're 12.
Okay.
And from and that's the young men's, because they're still 12 to 18. Then usually boys and girls, mostly boys, will go on like a mission for the church. They don't have to, but it's, you know, a lot of kids do, and it's great.
And this is all men, right? At age 12, go into the priesthood.
Yes.
Okay.
And but then they're set apart as elders. And they're now, they kind of graduate onto the higher priesthood, which is the Melchizedek priesthood. The Aaronic priesthood, which is the lower priesthood, like for Aaron in the Old Testament.
Right. Okay.
The Melchizedek priesthood, named after Melchizedek, which is the higher priesthood, which, I mean, there's three offices. Or two offices in the Melchizedek priesthood. There's elders, and then there's high priests.
High priests.
And they have just different responsibilities. That's all they do.
And is the high priest higher than the elders?
Yeah. So my husband's a high priest, but his responsibilities are just different. They all hold the basic priesthood. It's just, you know, when you're set apart to be a high priest, you have different authority and different responsibilities.
Okay, so it's not necessarily a hierarchical thing.
No.
But it's more of a category, it's like this different kind.
Exactly.
Okay. And you said there's a third kind of?
That's it, just two in the...
Oh, the two.
Just the two in the
within the Melchizedek. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. Within the Aaronic priesthood, the lower ones, which the young men are a part of, the 12 and 13-year-olds are deacons. The 13 and 14-year-olds are teachers.
Okay.
And the... The 16 and 7, what did I say? The 12 and 13 year olds, yeah, and 14 and 15 year olds, 16 and 17 year olds into 18, because a lot of them, by the time you're in high school, you should be out. So the 16 and 18 year olds are priests.
Okay.
And they have different responsibilities too.
Mm-hmm.
So like the deacons are in charge of collecting the fast offering. In a normal setting, not necessarily Manhattan, the deacons would go around and collect the fast offerings every Sunday, or the first Sunday of every month is a fast Sunday. They would go around and collect the fast offering from the different homes.
Okay, so they actually visit people's homes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the teachers are supposed to, their responsibility at the 14 and 15-year-olds is to go out with usually their dad or whatever and to actually teach, to comfort and teach. It's like it's a preparatory priesthood for the higher priesthood. So it basically preps these boys to receive the higher priesthood.
So the boys go to people's homes who are already in the ward and teach?
And teach, hopefully with their dads or with, you know, it's the home visits and whatever.
Okay.
And then the priests, they get to bless the sacrament. That's one of their responsibilities, to prepare and bless the sacrament that we have every week.
Okay. And is there any kind of graduation process between these different categories, or is age
no,
pretty much?
No, age pretty much, and they, you know, they have an interview with the bishop to see if they're worthy of going, you know, advancing on to the, you know.
So the bishop meets with each and every one of the
young
young men in the group.
Wow. And it's some, usually when it's an advancement, his counselors do a lot too. It's good that he delegates.
Yeah, counselor, sorry, just to clarify, counselor is spelled like regular counselor?
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay.
Counselor, yeah. It's basically his helpers. It's like the bishop, and then he has a first and second counselor, all of who have different responsibilities to taking care of the ward group.
Okay. And the counselors don't necessarily have direct relationships with the presidents of the groups.
They do.
Oh, they do. Okay.
So the second counselor, let me get you my handbook.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. I forgot to do this. This, by the way, okay, so this is telling you, of course, you know,
okay,
the description.
Yeah.
I think the last paper is actually mine that I have to fill out. And you can reach me at that email address. You can always contact Teachers College if there's anything that you feel like you don't want to be included in the
that's
interview.
All right. What's the date today?
25th.
That's right. Okay.
Thank you so much. So that's just key.
Yeah, so this is, and you can basically take this. So, just you can give it back to me sometime. Because I do refer to it at times.
Yeah, that would be good. I can make a copy of it or something like that so that
yeah,
I can get it back to you quickly.
Totally. And it basically breaks it down, like the Melchizedek priesthood, what that is. So it starts out with the Melchizedek priesthood, what that means,
mm-hmm,
what their
responsibilities.
Every person gets this book.
Okay.
And this is basically what everybody is supposed to do and what they're, you know.
So this covers all the groups.
All of it.
Okay. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Karen had told me that there was stuff online, and I went looking for it, but I ended up reading all these testimonials and reading the scriptures, and it was interesting, and I ended up spending hours on the site without ever
getting there.
Yeah.
But it's good to have it in your hand. You don't have
right,
to fish online for it.
Right.
And, his different counselors do have, like, the second counselor isn't over the young women, so I'm supposed to meet
okay,
once a month in a real world. I'm supposed to meet with him once a month,
mm-hmm,
with my counselors, because I have counselors too,
mm-hmm,
and go over what we're doing in the young women's program, et cetera, et cetera. The first counselor, I think, meets with he also meets with another auxiliary group too, not just the young women, the second counselor, and maybe, I don't know, primary, or which is the kids group.
Right. Right. There's not a president of the primary.
There is.
There is also.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
She's very busy. Ours just had a baby, so she's relying on her counselors a lot. Okay. Yes, there is. There's a president over every group.
Okay. Right. So the counselors work with the presidents,
mm-hmm,
and they're divided amongst the two counselors?
And the bishop. I think the bishop takes one of them.
Okay.
I forget which one he takes.
Okay.
It's a little say in there.
Okay. And then in each group, there's a president,
and
a
counselor.
Mm-hmm. Is the leader different from the counselor? Or is that
It would be kind of like the bishop. So I'm like the bishop of the young women, but I'm just the young women's president.
There's oh, you're
president
the president, right.
Of
the president is the lead person of each group.
And then we have two counselors.
And then?
And a secretary.
Two counselors. So the president is the leader. Okay. So.
Yeah.
And then there's also teachers within the group, or does that just in the women's?
You know, there are teachers. Because the church, I don't know if Karen explained, it's kind of like, you need teachers that teach the lessons on Sunday. So you
right,
can be your one of your callings could be your you could be a teacher,
mm-hmm,
or you know I've got in my young women's organization I have it's divided up into three categories just like the young men.
Mm-hmm.
I have Beehives, which are the youngers, the 12 and 13 year olds. Then I have Maya Maids, which are the 14, 15 year olds, and then I have Laurels, which are the 16, 17, 18 year olds, and I have. As you'll read in there, the young women's president is supposed to be in charge of the Laurels, the oldest group, and work with them on their goal setting and stuff like that. And but the bishop before this one suggested that I call two advisors to oversee that group,
okay,
so I could kind of oversee the entire program.
Mm-hmm.
and delegate more, because I have three children and most of the people that I work with don't have any kids or just have one or whatever. So he suggested that. So then, yeah, so then there's a leader over the Maya-maids, and then she has a counselor. I mean, she has a advisor that works with her also. And then there's a counselor over the, my second counselor is in charge of the Beehives, which is the youngest group. And then she has an advisor that works with her.
Okay.
So those I have basically seven women that help me when we run this organization.
Okay.
Yeah. And within the seven, I mean, I also have a secretary, too. We teach the lessons on Sunday. Okay. We help the girls organize their activities of what they want to do and set goals. We have a goal-setting program. But then, you know, because the boys just do scouts. They're duty to God. That's basically what they follow. You know, the scouting program, the duty to God award. And the young women do personal progress, which is a goal-setting program that helps develop the girls spiritually and mentally and physically at times and helps them just obtain goals of personal growth.
So what might something like that look like?
I haven't, hold on. They each get a book. Get a book mm-hmm. called The Young Women's Personal Progress, mm-hmm. and you can take this too with
you.
Okay. So we have a theme, and it's just that, you know, the there's seven values.
Oh, okay. Okay. So there's set projects.
There's set projects they're supposed to do. So, like, okay. Let's say they want to, well, for individual worth, mm-hmm. you know, that they're a daughter of God. Says you're a daughter of a heavenly Father who knows you and loves you, and you're supposed to read those particular scriptures, mm-hmm. and then write in your journal how these scriptures teach you that heavenly Father loves you and is mindful of you. So you go through each of those, and then there's a big one at the end, a value project that's supposed to take like 10 hours mm-hmm. for each value project. So you can compile your personal family and history, instruct, you can help someone with a subject.
So you choose one of these.
One of these.
Okay.
And the rest of them are easy. Just read scripture things. Mm-hmm. It's easy. Mm-hmm. These, you know, these take time.
Oh, sure. I mean, and something like that.
Yeah.
Compiling a personal family history.
But it teaches the girls that they always have to, like, to be active and engaged and goal-seeking and, it's just self-betterment. You know, mm-hmm. I think kids today, they just kind of want to just float and not have to do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like my neighbor downstairs, William, who's, you know, African-American kid, and he's got a great mom and lives with his grandma, and it's just like today. I said, William, you done with high school yet? He's like, no. I'm like, William, you're supposed to graduate in January. What happened? Mm-hmm. He was like, I'm just lazy. I'm like, just do it. Just mm-hmm. get it over with and done. Mm-hmm. Set a goal, do it, get it done, and then you can be lazy after you graduate. Take a year off before you start college, you know? Okay. But just get out of high school. These kids can't get out, so.
If you're looking to go to college.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, they're crazy.
Yeah.
So it's a great program. It's terrific. And the girl, we've had one girl that's completed the program, but she's not from New York. She's from Mesa, Arizona, and she moved to do ballet. She's just studying at the Joffrey School.
Uh-huh.
And she completed her whole book.
Right, right.
And it was a big thing. So it was exciting that she did it. So
yeah.
I don't know if any of the other girls will finish, but.
Yeah, it looks like there's a lot to get through here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, each of these values is so, I mean, they're.
Yeah, so there's knowledge, choice, and accountability, good works, mm-hmm. integrity. Yeah, there they are. Yeah. So, yeah, and they're great.
Do they go through each of these with their.
Yes, they're supposed to.
With somebody.
And also, too, it's different from when I was in Young Women's, mm-hmm. is that their parents are supposed to be more involved. The parents can even sign them off on things. And so they're always, you know, learning constantly in the home and at church, and it's kind of like this thing to all help them together. But a lot of my girls don't have parents that are members. And
So then how do they end up coming to the, because you have the young women, right? So do they end up getting converted to the
church? I have one girl that got baptized about a year ago. The missionaries just started teaching her, and she's a terrific gal. And graduated from high school this year, and she is, her name's Latricia Davis, and she's going to go to college next year. She's going to go to a church. She got accepted to BYU Idaho. So, and somebody else, another one of my friends at church told the story. Anyway, someone's going to pay for her schooling.
Nice.
Because when this girl, this woman who's not active anymore at her law office had said, when she was at BYU, because she had gone to BYU, that someone, she couldn't pay her tuition, and someone said, you know, I see you're struggling, so let me finish paying for your school. And she said, how can I ever pay you back? She goes, just when you have the opportunity to pay somebody back, pay somebody back. So she's paying for this young girl to go to school. So, which is great.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So so she's going to go and go to school, and which is great. And then, anyway, so anyway. Go ahead. I know you had all the questions, but I'm
I want to just take it where it goes, because I have certain questions that are mostly clarification questions, but, you know, to hear about, you know, the things from your perspective, I mean, that'll teach me where I need to go in terms of my questions, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think the, as we as leaders, as far as the leadership position, I just talked to a girl last night who comes from a completely dysfunctional family in Harlem. Her mom had 10 kids. Only one child has graduated from high school, and that was because she had mentors at church. She started coming back to church, that the whole family had been baptized. I don't know why. I mean, it's
baptized
like one of the, like
church.
Joined the church in our church.
Oh, really?
The whole family, except for their dad, I think. So all 10 kids have been.
This was
baptized.
Relatively recently, right? Because the church hasn't been around that long.
Oh, in Harlem, it, I want to say they did. They did meet at Sylvia's at first, the restaurant.
Oh, they were part of that small group.
I think so.
I
think they were.
Okay.
So they never really kind of got going or whatever. But after their the father died, he was an alcoholic and never really there anyhow. Crystal, the girl who graduated from high school, started coming back to church.
Okay.
And she really got activated and started coming and was just a terrific person. And but the family suffers from such dysfunction. I explained to one of my girls, Tanya, last night, who's a high school dropout. And because I asked her, I said, Tanya, I don't know if this is the, could we had a, on Thursday nights, we usually have our young women's, we meet once a week. We do an activity, fun, and last night, we were supposed to go have dessert in the park, and I needed to go to Costco to get stuff for my cookies. So I dragged him to Costco and bought her a treat. And I helped one of the girls with her homework because she needed to do a speech. So we worked on that.
That's how life happens sometimes.
I was like, you guys, I'm sorry. Yeah. But they were fine. But so last night I was talking to Tanya. I said, so I just, and mind you, people have been trying to help this family. I've been in this particular congregation for 6 years. And everybody has tried to help this family. It's one of those things that they're so wrapped up in their situation that they can't get out. It's like the ghetto situation where you're always going to be on government assistance. You're always going to be living in shelters. You're always, you know, it's that type of thing. And it's like unless, and they don't know how to get out. They're kind of stuck, kind of running on a treadmill. They survive from day to day as opposed to actually live. So, Tanya failed ninth grade like three times, and or eighth grade three times. They held her back, and finally, I think they just pushed her through last year, so she could, you know, just get on. She's 17, supposed to start high school this year, and she went for 30 days, and she dropped out. Because she got in a fight with the ladies at the front office. And so then another girl that I worked with at church, who's a social worker for younger kids, was doing a project for her graduate program at Hunter. And we went over to her school and talked to her school counselors and the whole thing. Yeah, but she can start back this semester. It was great. And, you know, and but she's just not there. She won't grasp on. She doesn't. have, so we'll come down to, she doesn't have the skills to get herself in a situation to help herself. Mm-hmm. Her mother completely failed, and I think that's what it's come down to, is mm-hmm. that. I told her last night, and I said, Tanya, I said, we just want to know what you're doing with your life. I said, you know, are you going to go to school? Are you, do you want, and I said, I know that you know what you're do, what you need to do. I have no doubt in my mind that you know that you need to go back to school, mm-hmm. that you need to get an education, that you, you know, you need to keep doing this stuff. Mm-hmm. Pause.
Yeah. That's great. Okay. So in your group are a lot of the young women, oh wow, these are beautiful.
Thanks.
They look so good. Are a lot of the young women coming into the church rather than born into it?
Yes.
Okay.
Mostly. Mm-hmm. Chinese is kind of the exception. If I kind of get off where we want to go to steer me back in the right direction, I won't feel bad if I get you.
Oh, no. Yeah. I don't have a set direction. There's certain questions that I want answered, some of which I've asked already.
Okay.
But I don't have set directions. It's not like
Yeah, so like with Tanya, so like I just finally, someone just, you feel so bad because like I said, Tanya, I know the difference between what you right and wrong, what you need to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I've come to the conclusion that you don't have the skill set or the ability to get yourself from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
I said, those are skills that are learned when you're very young.
Yeah.
And I said, your mother, because she had, there were so many kids, and she really didn't have a husband, she just kind of checked out.
Well, she's probably struggling with her own issues too. Right?
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
I think she's a drug addict and
mm-hmm.
And I said, she just is trying to cope too, so she had all these kids and got overwhelmed and could not teach you the things that you needed.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, in my opinion, I think you and Nicholas need to go find somebody that can help you learn things, because mm-hmm. we've tried.
Mm-hmm.
I said, people have invited you to come live with them.
Mm-hmm.
To get you out of your home situation.
Mm-hmm.
We've tried, we've come to your school hundreds of cases, you know, I mean, not hundreds, but on quite a few occasions. I try to get her a new school. It has nothing to do with that. I said, and I asked her, I said, have you heard of the saying, you know, you can bring a horse, you know, that saying? And she mm-hmm. was like, yeah. I said, that's kind of where we are.
Mm-hmm.
You
have to figure out what you want to do and do something.
Right.
Because you are 17 now, and your options are running out.
She's on the cusp of adulthood here.
Yeah, but yep. She acts like she's 12.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's kind of where, that's how old she was when her dad died. Or before mm-hmm. that, she was probably 10 or maybe 11.
Mm-hmm.
But she acts like she's 12.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she doesn't think she has to grow up. And I said, and she has a sister that's 19 that's pregnant, and the guy who got her pregnant is in jail, and just total ghetto. It just made me so mad last night. And she's, you know, she's going to bring her baby in the world because she loves him. And we got into it last night. I was so mad. I said, it's not about, she goes, you think you're better than me? She's talking to her sister. I said, did I say that? Lucretia, did I say that? I said, no. I said, because it's not about you mm-hmm. anymore. Mm-hmm. It's about the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't think I can give my baby what it needs? And I said, do you have a job? I do what I do. I said, what? I do what I do.
Yeah.
I was like, what, you sell drugs, you prostitute yourself, and that's probably what she does.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I said, are you going to school?
Yeah.
She said, yeah. I said, well, I heard you dropped out or got kicked out. She said, well, who told you that? I was telling you that until I learned.
right.
And I said, well, I just know that you did. She goes, I'm in school. I said, well, okay, fine, you're in school then.
Yeah,
I said,
yeah.
So you live on Google today. You live on government assistance? I said, what? You know, your whole life. So, and she was just all over my face. Did you think you're better? I said, I didn't say I was better. I got pregnant when I was 29 too. I said, but you kept your baby. So that's your prerogative. I said, yes, but I was 29 and ready to take care of a baby. You are 19. There's a difference. And I can guarantee if I was 19 and got pregnant, I would have given my baby up for adoption.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guarantee it.
Yeah.
She says, well, you know, all of her older sisters have had babies, and, you know, the whole thing. It's just a mess. It's just, I was so depressed after I left that conversation. Because it's hard. It's a hard life to see and view, the ghetto life.
Yeah.
It's that mentality of, you know, and she has no, it just gave me a headache. And I was left. I was just like, oh, holy crap. I can't deal. Harlem's a very difficult place to live, and you have to see that.
Yeah, and especially since there's such an emphasis on community and family within the church,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and a lot of people are probably in Harlem are probably coming from broken homes and so forth. So,
and you know that they're never going to get out of that cycle. So anyway, so back to Tanya. So I said to Lucretia, I said, Tanya, you look at Lucretia. She dropped out of school the same time that you did.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I am so thankful that you're coming to church. Yeah. I said, that to me is something that you're really doing right, and I'm so glad that you're coming.
Yeah, that's what's so interesting about her. So you say that basically she's dropped out of school, but she's still coming to church.
Yeah.
So she's still looking for some form of stability that's giving her something that she
mm-hmm.
needs.
Yeah.
And maybe school, you know, if she's acting like a 12-year-old, school's going to be a really difficult place
mm-hmm.
for a young woman who's supposed to act like she's 17.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is. It's very difficult. And I said, so, you know, I said, there's a path. I said, you are headed on that path. I said, you're not sleeping around or doing anything mm-hmm. right now. So I said, you are headed on that path that Lucretia's on.
Mm-hmm.
She knows. And she says, yeah, I told her to give her baby up for adoption, and she has nothing to give her. And she has. I said, you're headed down that same path.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I said, I worry about you because mm-hmm. I know you have so much more potential than you realize.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I'm not mad at you. I don't mm-hmm. think you're a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, I love you very much, and I just care about you, but I, you know.
Does she see herself as going down the same path?
I don't think so.
What does she think sets her apart?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know what she sees herself as, because she, and I turned to her, and I, because she's a compulsive liar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I said, you have learned, I said, is it something that you've also learned in your life is to lie?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you need to get help so you can get to the reality of what's happening in your life.
Right.
I said, I know it's a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to lie to make yourself feel better or whatever about your life situation. I said, but it's hurting you in the long run. I said, you need to get help.
Yeah.
Because she's not going to let us help her. And,
Well, she is.
She is in a way.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just came from a agency yesterday that specializes in kids transitioning out of the foster care system from that 18 to 23 age. And, you know, so much of it, of their work looks like parenting work. So much of it is heavily guidance and counseling,
sure,
and that kind of stuff, because they haven't learned how to make their own decisions mm-hmm. yet, and a lot of them are coming from difficult circumstances.
So hard.
Yeah.
Just God bless social workers, because I tell you, I couldn't stand to be around that kind of dysfunction every day.
Yeah.
It just is so depressing.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's just like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you see it, and you hope. And she's like, well, I'm going to go to Utah, because her sister's in Utah. I said, let me tell you a story about my friend who's an alcoholic. I said, tell her a story about my friend who thinks he can move everywhere to escape his problems.
Exactly.
And I said,
you're there everywhere you move.
Exactly. I said, you take those with you. Mm-hmm. So unless you stand and face your reality and change here, mm-hmm. you're never going to change there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go to school here. La, 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 la. I said, you can. But you've chosen not to.
Yeah.
And it's just, it just drives me crazy. But her older brother, Nicholas, who's also in the Young Men's Program, he's changed a lot. He went to mm-hmm. high school in Washington State for a year.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the dysfunction of that family, he doesn't know how to complete tasks. They always take the easy way out. They always want to play. Kids want to play, but mm-hmm. they were never taught how to do hard work
mm-hmm.
and accomplish something. Mm-hmm. Their sister, who's going to college, down at the community school now, and have the call, you know, my mom, I thought my mom would be a better mentor than she is. She's just flaky, I guess. But to take Crystal through point A, the sister out there, she can't get her work done. She can't get it completed. She can't, because she never learned that.
Right,
so
right,
she's suffering at 23
right,
in college.
Right, right.
Absolutely. Even though she's gotten out.
Absolutely.
And it's
absolutely.
Just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're the hardest family there
mm-hmm.
for me. I mean, mm-hmm. I just watch them year after year just get worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. But there's hope. There's hope still.
So, I mean, they have several members then that are still active in the church.
Nicholas and Tanya
yeah.
still come to church.
Mm-hmm.
And Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
That's it of the 10 kids.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So Joni, their youngest sister, their grandma took care of her.
Mm-hmm.
She's a mess.
Yeah.
Oh, she's just absent. She's tried to get pregnant at 14 and...
Tried to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She and her boyfriend thought that would be a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, are you an idiot?
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to go beat somebody up. And it's just like, you know what? And she's so smart. She's the smartest kid in that family.
Mm-hmm.
She's brilliant at math.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to take her away.
Yeah.
But it's, you know.
This is so great because you're giving me some of the specifics. Basically, you know, Karen started telling me about, you know, that, you know, the church has grown a lot in the past 8 years, mm-hmm. especially in Harlem, and that they're bringing on families, you know, that are converting,
mm-hmm.
and you know, that there's this huge push to get, you know, she told me that the wards are all geographically based,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, it being in Harlem, then you're trying to get the people who live in Harlem,
mm-hmm.
right, to also come. So she said that some people are people like herself who have moved to the mm-hmm. area, and then some people are from, you know, who grew up in the community.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And there, I mean, then that's the worst case scenario. Then we have, like, the Baldwin family that joined the church, I want to say 4 years ago, maybe mm-hmm. when Jewel was just coming to the Young Women's Program. So she was 14, 12, maybe. So she's been a member 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And their whole family joined. Their mom's Honduran and their dad's grew up in Harlem. And, and Jewel is 16. She's mm-hmm. and she's one of my favorites because mm-hmm. she's sassy. She's sassy. After, you know, she's just sassy. But the difference of having a mother and father in the home, and, you know, I don't necessarily agree with a lot of their child rearing techniques, so to say, because I think they're, you know, he's harsh, then he's not harsh, and he's harsh, and then he's not harsh. That must
mm-hmm.
be that's my husband.
Mm-hmm. But they're great.
She's moody. She's the moodiest teenager I've ever met. She's just so moody. She's so funny and so great. And then she's very smart, but mm-hmm. then she'll just be like, hey, Joel, huh? What's going on? Nothing. You know, it's just like teenage angst, you know? It's just like, oh.
Yeah, but you've got the whole gamut, right? From 12 to 18.
I do. And it's so great to see, because the bishop before us, their family just moved to Idaho for work. And mm-hmm. their little 12-year-old that came in the program, she was so 12. It was so nice to have just a young girl,
yeah.
you know, that was still a young girl, mm-hmm. as opposed to these, you know, 12-year-olds that live around in Harlem that are just hardened and
they grow up fast.
It is.
They have to, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all protective.
It is.
Uh-huh. I mean, yeah.
Yep. And, you know, anyway, so, but they're a great family, and their dad really pushes education because he wants a life better for his kids than he ever had.
Right.
And, you know, he's got some really smart kids. You know, Demetrius, their son, is a smart kid, but mm-hmm. just not cool to be smart, and, you know, just those grades have gone down the hill, and he goes to a really great school, and it's just... But I'm not part of the Young Women's. I used to be the education counselor that was one of my job before I became Young Women's President again. I used to be Young Women's President, and they released me, and then I was in the Relief Society, which I, you know, I'm doing something else. And then they made me the education counselor for the church, for the ward.
Oh, there is an education counselor,
yes,
for the ward.
Yes, I used to be it.
What does an education counselor do?
Well, what we did was we tried to just help, just another... a level of trying to get the kids, how's your school work? We provided tutoring after school. I made sure there was a snack there so they could eat. And it was just kind of like, make sure you eat at school. Make sure you know what is your... and there's actually an education counselor for the stake, if you'd like to talk to her. She's great.
Yeah, that's... Karen had told me who
Cindy Budikofer.
Okay, so mm-hmm. I'm going to see if I can.
She's great. And Cindy works at Trinity. I think it's Trinity.
What's Trinity?
Trinity's a private school.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was trying to just get the kids, help them pass their classes. Just a little additional support, you know. Giving them a place to do their homework that wasn't their apartment. You know, where their TV's on and kids are running around. It's after school. It's the place quiet where they could study and then after.
So they actually would go to the church.
To the church. Yeah, when we were around the corner. Yeah, mm-hmm. after school, twice a week or once a week.
Okay.
And yeah, and apparently before I was there, they had tutoring and stuff going on for mm-hmm. the kids in Harlem.
Okay.
And it just kind of went. Then we tried to get the mentorship program going, because it used to be big in the stake to have the singles mentor, you know, the kids that needed it. And some of the singles were flaky, and it's like you can't have a mentorship program when you have the flaky single people that, you know, have, not if you're single, but they weren't flaky. Some of them just didn't follow up on their, some of them were great, like Crystal, who's in college now. Her mentor was great, helped her graduate from high school.
Sorry, the singles program I thought was young people, young adults, mm-hmm. or is it younger than that?
Young adults, 18 and up.
Oh, 18 and up, mm-hmm. okay.
So a lot of, some of them worked, some of them didn't.
Sure.
You know, and some of them needed a lot more, some of their cases were a lot more difficult than others. Mm-hmm. So we tried to combine that with the young women's program. So I called different mentors. It hasn't been very successful. I guess it's my fault because I'm not a very organized person. So it's just, you know, trying to get those going. They're like, what does that entail? And it's a lot of work to take on a teenager and help them. And I think a lot of people are like, whoa,
yeah.
I don't know if I want to do that.
Uh-huh.
mm-hmm. So it kind of, you know, kind of fell by the wayside because really Tani is my only one that really needs a mentor.
Okay. Okay.
Seriously.
So in a way, you're doing a lot of that work. The other adults in your...
Yeah.
They're doing a lot of mm-hmm. that.
We've tried. Mm-hmm. We've done. So yeah, so the education... So just that and helping them when there's time to apply to college.
Okay.
To get their applications filled out, which one of the mentors for this girl did. It helped her. You know, a lot of people stepped up and got her applications and stuff through. We also, I can still get emails from Cindy... with, you know, like when the high school fairs are and, you know, when you kids have to pick a high school and when the SAT tests are coming up and the prep classes and even in elementary school, like who's accepting who for elementary school and the junior highs, and just so we can keep an eye out And so whenever I get
in... What are you talking about accepting?
When you go into, you know, like elementary schools, it's not just... You, if you don't want to go to your neighborhood school,
right.
you have to be accepted into another
There's
school.
There's like a lottery
There's a lottery.
System, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So when those applications are due and...
Okay.
So when I get those, I'm always thinking, well, who is in that age mm-hmm. that are coming up?
Right.
Like the other, you know, the other weekend, Sunday, I was looking at the girls who are going to come in to be Beehive soon, and you know, how they're doing, and you know, so we're going to start inviting them into Young Women's for about a half hour. Mm-hmm. You know, during open air, we have like a
okay.
prayer and a song, and just kind of
get them
transitioning in out of being kids
primary,
into
yeah.
young women.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then same with our older Laurels, they're going to go into Relief Society.
Right,
it's kind
right,
of that transitioning
right.
in, but they're probably going to the singles congregation because that's a lot more fun than with a bunch of, you know, 35 plus women.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, great. That's how I felt.
Is a singles group co-ed?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It is. It's a lot more. Yeah, it's fun. You know, but you still have Relief Society with the, just with women, but mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's set up just like the church organization, and they usually, but it's all singles.
Okay.
But the bishop will always be married, so they'll usually okay. call somebody from the stake that's married
yeah.
to be the bishop, and then he'll call counselors, and then the rest of it's all singles.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you go into the singles group?
I did. I was, yes, I was. Yes, I did. I was in the singles ward for a long time,
mm-hmm.
10 years, but I didn't date any Mormons. I was kind of crazy and wild.
Oh, really?
As an actress. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Very.
Were you born into the church?
I was. Or, okay. I'm from Bountiful, Utah, which is about 15 minutes north of Salt Lake.
Okay. Okay.
Just a suburb of Salt Lake.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
just,
no.
Like,
and I was a theater, yeah, well, I was a theater major and mm-hmm. Just kind of college spiritually, even though I truly believe that our church is the true church. I believe in the church. I believe
mm-hmm.
in the gospel of Jesus
mm-hmm.
Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But we were given free agency, and so it's
Absolutely.
You know, I get to choose what I get to do, and
right.
I can't say that when I came to New York in my time in college, you know, I was. Just making choices that I thought were eventually that were okay.
Yeah.
And then I got pregnant with my now husband, who joined the church 6 years ago. And people are like, yeah, but it all worked out. And I was like, but yeah, but you don't understand.
During the time.
I said, it was hell.
It
was horrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was 29 and my career was going great because I met him when I was doing a Broadway show. And,
mm-hmm.
and, I was going out for movies, and I was going out for TV shows, and things were going good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got pregnant, and it was just like, okay. And then he didn't want anything to do with me, that I trapped him, and, you know, it was, he had an affair with somebody else, and it was like this sordid, and it was hell, literally
yeah,
hell.
Yeah.
And so, but it's funny, because during the whole transition, we both of us, like, and then something happened to him. He had, like, this big epiphany of, I'm going to screw up my life completely if I don't get back with her, because I totally told him to hit the road, Jack.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he had this big epiphany at Marble Collegiate Church, and he, anyway. So we got back together. Long
uh-huh,
story short, we
uh-huh.
got back together. But it was a long haul. And we've been married 8 years now, and we've been together over 10.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard. But, you know, I came back to church. We were going to two
right.
separate churches. He was
right.
at Marble Collegiate. I was here. And then the missionary started to teach him because the bishop of the singles ward, because
mm-hmm.
I was in the singles ward pregnant,
mm-hmm.
said, you know, do you want to learn what she's learning about? So the missionaries came, and then we had these discussions. And then he and I went away to Thailand try a year to do a project over there. And for him.
With the Mormon church?
No, just his work.
Okay.
Because he's a stagehand and he's
okay.
a technical director. So he
uh-huh.
oversaw the installation and building of a big Thai cultural center in Phuket.
Wow.
Thailand, yeah.
Uh-huh.
He was great.
Yeah.
So we kept going to church and whatever, and then he decided he wanted to get baptized. So he got baptized about a year later, and I said, I have nothing to do with it. You investigate on your own, do the whole thing, because I don't want, you know,
yeah.
just come back and say, I joined the church with you, and that's not... So anyway, I did come back, and it's like, I don't know why I'm telling you this, there was a purpose to the story.
think I was asking you about joining the singles ward.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, so I was in the singles ward, but I never dated Mormon guys.
Mm-hmm.
People are boring and they expect,
they expect that.
Oh, they, you know, they just have this, they're really intimidated. It's like somebody who's, like, Reiner, Karen. She's a great gal.
Right.
She's smart and she's funny and she, you know, all that thing. Mm-hmm. But they're really intimidated.
Really?
By those kind of women. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And it's mostly guys that grow up in the church.
Yeah.
Feel this way.
Huh.
As opposed to, like, my husband, who never wore around Mormon girls or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, they're terrific. I mean, he absolutely is like, yeah, I would date half these girls in this ward, you know? Because they have good values, and they keep them, most of them are pretty, they're attractive, there's something about them. Mm-hmm. And even when we did the show over at Lincoln, over at Radio City, all the crew guys were commenting on the youth and how well they were behaved, and just, you know, there was something different about them.
Very appealing.
Yes, it was. And it's like, you know, and Mormon guys don't see that for some reason.
What do you mean?
They just, you know, the education, they want their, because, you know, their home values and you know, they want their wife to, you know, I think in every, some guys want to, like, uphold that, those typical values.
Do you mean to have women that are a little more docile?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, you're not going to find that kind of woman in New York.
Is Karen married to a man who grew up outside of the church?
Karen's not married.
Oh, she's not.
She's single.
What did I think she is married? Okay. Okay.
She's single.
Okay. Yeah. For some reason, I thought she had mentioned her husband. Oh, sure. That would be great.
No, she's single.
Okay. Yeah.
And she's terrific.
Yeah.
And it's like Ned, it's like the guy who was the Elders Quorum president.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, sure. I'm like, why don't you just date Karen? Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, she's great. Anyway, but my husband finds them completely attractive, and so have other people that have joined, like other men. Even my friend Sean, who's not a member of the church, finds Elliot. Every time he comes to a party where I have people from our church over or whatever, he's like, she's great. Yeah. He's like, where can I find me one of those? And Don always says, at church. Come on, Shani.
So yeah. New York Mormon women are very lively then.
They are. They're here for a reason. Like anybody who moves to New York, they're either here for school or for their career or, you know.
Right, exactly.
They're not just, you know. So anyway. I just find it a problem that they're completely intimidated. That's irritating. Because that's why, you know.
I'm thinking of the Mormon kids that I knew in high school.
Uh-huh.
And the girls were great. They were all outgoing and really just, yeah, great people. You know, those were my friends. And then the boys, I remember, were just kind of like very proper, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, but you can be lively and fun, you know, charismatic and stuff, and not be a total.
But how is that? I mean, you're going up in the same church, right?
I know.
It's kind of funny.
Different people.
Yeah.
Like, I have great nephews and I have loser nephews. We're all from the same family. And they're from the same family.
Right.
Okay, so.
Okay, well, before, I don't want to take up too much of your time. So one of the other things that I really wanted to ask you about was, you didn't grow up in New York, did you?
No, I grew up in Downey, Utah. I went to the University of Utah.
Okay, so what
I've been here almost 14 years.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah. That's right, because you started your career here.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are some of the you talked a little bit about this, but the particular challenges and differences in having a ward in Harlem, especially a growing ward, as opposed to, you know, other places that you know about?
We used to not have enough people to cover all positions.
Right.
So we had to do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you were here during the whole...
Yeah.
That's right, because you've been here for 14 years.
Yeah. So I was, you know, in Harlem. I wasn't in Harlem. I lived in Midtown, so I would go downtown.
You'd be the other ward, yeah.
Yeah, but even the past 6 years, I mean, our ward, we used to live in that... We used to... The church, I'll show you the church around the corner when you come. It was like a little shoebox. It was an old Jehovah's Witness building.
Okay.
And it had no windows, and it was just one floor, and it had a basement with one room in it, and that was it. We used dividers to divide the classrooms, and we just had to do a lot. You know, we were all, there was no somebody to do activity. We did everything. The few, you know, 15 people that were really active, 20 people that were really active, had to do it all.
Right.
And which makes you kind of feel good, because, you know, if you're in a giant congregation, you get lost in the masses.
Do you?
Yes.
Well, compared to it being 15, 20 people, sure.
But yeah, but if it was about, I'd say probably 100 people would come. But you, to make the organization run.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right.
You know, you're
needed.
You have
to have core people.
Yeah, you have to have core people,
right.
And they're needed.
Right. So the 15 of you must have been very tight.
Yes. And it was small enough that you knew everybody, and the people would come, and you were, it was terrific. That was the positive side to it. The fact that you knew everybody that walked in the door,
right.
And you made them feel welcome, and right. You were a real family. We were a real family. And then we moved around the corner, and we were really, because it was literally, we could not, there was 200 chairs in the room, and we couldn't fill them up. By the time we left the space, there was standing room only,
right.
Which was great. So then we moved, and then it's great when more people come, and there's people that I don't even know their names that come to church.
Because
it's so big. And I'm down with the young women, so I know all the people in my program.
Right,
then
you know
like,
the families there, you know the families coming up.
I don't know a lot of ladies in the Relief Society, because I don't go to the Relief Society anymore, because I'm young women's, because they're most the same hour.
Right.
And so we have activities and stuff to help alleviate that problem, but...
But when you have 300 to 600 people, it's just not...
You can't do it, and but it's great. I mean, but the thing about going to church here as opposed to going to church like in Utah, right? Or even being in a larger ward, because Don and I started going to a different ward before we were married, and I made him leave. I said we can't stay. Because it was people, it's the culture. You have to understand, any culture that surrounds an organized religion, it's like, it's too much. It's like if you live in Baptist, you know, in Baptist land, in the South or Virginia or whatever, all the Republican, and they all tell the same jokes, and it's the culture that surrounds it. Same thing, you get the culture in Utah. It's all that culture that's so unbelievably irritating. Can I put those in?
No. You put them in.
Yes. I broke it. And it's the culture that's so irritating. So we were going to church in one of the wards, and we had these, every week we'd have these speakers that had just moved to New York from BYU. And these young couples that were, you know, had never lived outside of Utah, who were just as boring and irritating. You know, it's really great to be here. I moved here with my husband. We met at BYU. And we'll be here a couple of years because he's doing an internship with, like, you know, some law firm downtown, and it was
they were also temporary people.
And it was, and they don't bother to even say hello when you come in the door. And for some reason, people, and even in Idaho, my friends who've moved to Idaho are finding the same problem. People are so comfortable in their own little bubble that they don't reach out. They don't step out of the bubble. Go, oh, you must be new. Come on in, you know, and thank you for coming. And that's what you get more in New York and other places outside the Utah bubble. So when you've got the people
you
from that,
take it for granted.
Very
when
much
you're in
so.
Utah, right?
Yeah, very much so. And so when you get people from that bubble here, they bring that with them, and it's you just go, it doesn't work.
So did you deliberately pick the Harlem ward then?
No, because I wanted to stay in Midtown. I love that. We moved, they divided the ward because it was too big.
Okay.
And we.
They divided the downtown ward, the Midtown one.
Yeah, it used to be Manhattan's second ward, which was all of the east side, like the school district, down below 57th Street and below.
Okay.
That used to be one ward. Okay. It was gigantic.
Yeah.
And so they divided it and made it just kind of west side downtown. And we lived on West 49th Street, so we loved our ward. Didn't want to move out of our ward, and we had moved, and we're still going down to that ward. And then finally, we said, okay, after summer, we'll move up to the ward.
Oh, okay, so you were living here and going down to the Midtown West ward, and then moved to this one.
Yeah.
Okay.
After the summer, because he was away for a lot of that summer, and we finally just said, okay, after you come back, we'll go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Midtown West ward was fine?
Yeah, you know, it was. And it was anything. It was just kind of like the people, because we took a lot of the good people from that ward. And people were, yeah. Because it's people that don't, they have to struggle, that are here for a reason. I find that people with because the East Side ward tends to have more money, same with the Upper West Side, mm-hmm. so it's kind mm-hmm. of people, I don't know. It's just people's personalities and what they do, I guess. I'm more of an artsy, liberal arts
right.
type of person.
Yeah.
And so...
So it actually even matches kind of the neighborhood characteristics in general.
Yes, because people up here are struggling.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. They're struggling, and they live in Harlem because they have to live in Harlem. I can get this apartment downtown. Mm-hmm. I have to live here.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I like that aspect about it.
Yeah.
You know, that we're all kind of in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's like my friend Karen and Wayne, who's the Relief Society president, Karen. They have a townhouse on 111th Street that he got in the lottery for, anyway. But Wayne gives his money away. He makes a lot of money, and he's the most generous, one of the most generous people I know.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to Theo and says, yeah, make me some cookies. I'll buy them for $500 just to give the women, young women, more money in their budget,
yeah.
You know, which is great. So I don't know if I answered your question. I don't know if I did about the difference between going, you feel needed here. That's one thing I really like.
Mm-hmm.
You don't take it for granted here. You go to church because you want to go to church mm-hmm. here. Even though my mom's and my family's lived in Utah forever, and I love going home to visit my mom's ward where I grew up.
Right.
Those people there, I adore.
And you, yeah.
And, but yeah, it's the taking for granted of what you have.
Yeah.
That is kind of, you know, step up, and you see, and it's interesting because even in our Harlem branch or Harlem ward, you see the people that aren't used to stepping up, that kind of take a back seat, that don't participate.
Mm-hmm.
They choose not to go outside of themselves. They form little cliques, mm-hmm. and you know, we're going to do this, and that's not what we're about
mm-hmm,
over
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's why people come to our ward, because we're special. Our Harlem ward is special. Because we are people that are, you know, who accept anyone. I mean, the people that have joined the church in the past 6 years. My mom is hosting one of the guys that joined the church. His name's Paul Centers, a little 72-year-old man. My mom said, yeah, he's white. I said, do you expect him to be black? I said, yeah. Paul was an extreme alcoholic and, like, lost his whole family.
Yeah.
And lost his, they left him.
Mm-hmm.
His wife lost his job. He was kind of alcoholic that, like, drank lighter fluid.
Wow.
And that extreme,
mm-hmm.
and missionaries found him and taught him the gospel, and so happy. So it's like you don't care. It's like you don't really care. And I have a friend that's gay that comes to the church, who's Mormon and trying to figure that the whole thing out. He said, church makes me happy. I said, well, good. Then you should come.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I don't care that he's gay.
Yeah.
You know. And not a lot of people really care that he's gay.
Yeah.
And which I like, because I don't feel judged here.
The Harlem ward is more liberal, you think, than the other wards? I mean, there's a stereotype, right, that gay people are not welcome, that black people are not welcome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the fascination with the Harlem ward, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think it's gospel in its truest form, the gospel in its truest form. Because we are a neglected congregation. We do have, you know, people from every race.
A neglected congregation?
It's a eclectic.
Eclectic, yes. I was like, that doesn't make sense to me. Yeah.
Eclectic, and it's terrific for that purpose.
Yeah.
And it's just a really special spirit. I think it's the gospel in the true form, as, you know, because people love one another. We truly love each other.
Yeah.
And it's just nice. It's great. So that answers your question or not. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I asked a similar question to Karen, and she answered it differently. And it's just to see, you know, I mean, I'm going to try to ask it of many people as possible when I go. I'm hoping to meet people.
Good.
So, you know.
That's great.
Yeah, we're just basically trying to get a picture of, you know, different institutions, different community groups, and see what it's like. And of course, the Mormon Church is a really interesting one, given its history. This explosive growth means they're doing something right. I mean, people are coming in, so.
And it's great. There was this woman that, because every first Sunday we have fast testimony meeting, and people get up and bear testimony. And she's been a member of the church about a year, she just loves what she's learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she feels like, for the first time in her life, she feels like she knows who she is, she knows where she's going, she knows where she came from. She watched the documentary. Did you watch the documentary on PBS about Mormons a couple weeks ago?
No.
She watched it, and some of it was, it really delved into Joseph Smith and a lot of the first issues of the church and polygamy and all of that. She goes, you know, I didn't like some things that I had heard. Because you don't teach that when you, missionaries don't go out and teach the history of the church and Joseph Smith and polygamy and blah, 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 because that's not what the church is about.
Right.
She goes, I hear some things I really didn't like. She says, but that's not what the gospel's about. I said, my life has changed drastically in the past year. And she said, I love the gospel. It makes me happy. And people ask me why I'm so happy. It's because of this church. And you just kind of listen to that and go, yeah, that's what it's about. And you can put all the other things aside and go, that's what it's about.
Can I ask you more about that? So is the thinking then that there is cultural standards and different things going on around the gospel, but that is that considered more of a human interpretation than the actual gospel itself? Or?
Explain that a little. Like, what do you mean?
Okay, so when you say that polygamy and the Joseph Smith and the early history of the church is not what it's about,
well,
do you know what I'm saying?
Joseph Smith was instrumental in bringing this church back to this dispensation of people. He had to be him. If you don't believe in Joseph Smith, you can't believe in the truthfulness of the gospel. You know, you can't. And so that's kind of the history of it. God needed him, and he needed to restore the gospel as it was in the time of Christ, and all that with him. But mind you, it was in 1860. You know, so there was the history that took place in 1860 with all the different religions and all the different backgrounds and slavery and all of what people thought of black people back then, and you know, all of it comes into play with just being human. He wasn't God, he was a human. So when he received the information from God and whatever to organize the church, that has to have some bearing on
that's
his
exactly
thinking.
That's what I was asking, is the cultural circumstance at the time, is that what you're talking about?
I think so.
Yeah.
And those, because the gospel has, I want to say, evolved, I think, to a pure form where that's past. We needed that past. And it's to get to what we have today, which is Christ is the foundation of the church. We know where we came from. We know we're here for a reason. We know where we're going. Family unit is so important within that structure. And also, is just to be like Christ. You know, the way the church is organized into the different categories and the callings is to be like Christ, to learn how to serve your fellow man. No one gets paid in the Mormon church.
Right.
You know, so it's learning how to serve. I am learning how to serve these young women. I wouldn't have that opportunity unless I really did it for work or something to really serve. I don't get paid, although that I would get paid for it. I mean, it's truly selfless service to have to go, like visiting teaching. I have people, ladies that I have to call besides that I visit teach in the religious study program. They have visit teachers, and I call them and check up on them and say they're okay and give them a little spiritual message and to have to do that, mm-hmm. take care of one another as would Christ, mm-hmm. you know, if he were here.
Mm-hmm.
So that, which I think is a beautiful concept about mm-hmm. the gospel, is the ability to learn how to serve one another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So and I think that's it.
Yeah.
And to perfect relationships.
Mm-hmm.
I said to perfect your relationship with God, to perfect your relationship with yourself and with your family, and then those other people out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome.
This interview has been so rich and taken me in directions that I wasn't even thinking about, so I really appreciate
your
time.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Yeah.
Is it a two-year program over there, down there?
What I'm doing?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's a two-year program, so I'll be here another year, and then, you know, Professor Warren wants me to write
for funding for another year, mm-hmm. which may or may not happen because I also miss home. So, mm-hmm.
What part of you're still in San Francisco?
Well, I last lived in San Francisco. My fiance is in San Jose,
okay.
Which is like an hour mm-hmm. south of there. So, oh yeah, you know California a little bit. So, you know,
right.
I'm really not sure because if I get you know, some kind of tenure track job somewhere else,
yeah.
then he's willing to move. So I don't know where I'm going to be. And
it's like, oh,
a little strange, you know. I'd like to be rooted at some mm-hmm. point.
Yeah.
So.
When do you guys get married?
September.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah,
thank
that's
you.
That's great. It's
yeah.
so exciting.
We're in the middle of planning everything. So.
And that's yeah. crazy.
Yeah.
You guys are going to get married in San Jose?
No, in Los Angeles.
Oh, you will.
Yeah, so we're doing long-distance wedding planning at the same time as all of this.
Oh,
so.
That's exciting, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it good. Is.
How long have you guys been engaged? Known each other?
Well, we got engaged in August, mm-hmm. and we've known each other for almost 3 years
that's
now.
Great.
Yeah.
Good. So. I love that.
It's about that time for us.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marriage is hard.
I think any time, I mean, like you said, it's learning how to take care of one another. I mean, it takes work.
Years. Years.
Yeah, and if people think that, oh, you fall in love and it's just roses after that, I mean, that's just a very romantic idea.
It is.
Yeah.
Because it's true, and because it trickles down. It's kind of like you have Christ at the center of your life and learning how to take care of one another. And then you have to learn how to take care of yourself, mm-hmm. first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
And then your spouse, and then other people. And it's like that little trickle-down theory. And it's like, in its simplicity and its purest form, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And you hope to achieve that and obtain that
yeah.
in your lifetime.
Yeah.
Because that's all you really
get. Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And, yeah. And also, too, we believe that, too, once you die, just because you didn't do it here, there's still room for growth once you die in the afterlife.
Okay.
That you will be able to still learn and try to, because it's eternal. If we believe that life is eternal, which we do, you know, as we die, there's always room for improvement.
Wow.
Yeah, because I'm not going to perfect a relationship with my husband while I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and once you die, because you get married in the temple, you get married for time and eternity. So you're together as a family even after life.
That's right. I did read a little bit about this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's why the family unit is so important, is because, as it says in Isaiah, when the father hearts of the father shall turn to their, whatever that scripture is, there, and it's turning back to the family, realizing how important that family unit is and to be together. Mm-hmm. So even in the afterlife, if you believe we live in afterlife, that we're all together as a unit, that we're all you know, be with each other and see each other and live that life. And so we're all connected. I think we're all going to connect it in a way
mm-hmm.
just going to make itself manifest. I don't know. I'm not mm-hmm.
it. Yeah. It's hard for me to conceptualize, especially since I didn't grow up with that kind of yeah.
Yeah. But it's great. And that's
yeah.
So...
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you welcoming me to your home and everything.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So.
My pleasure. I think I have this to finish when I'm done.
Yeah,
great. It's good.
Okay, well, I'll let you put those cookies in the oven. I'm just going to pack up my stuff.
Thanks. I'm sorry, I forgot your name again. Call
Linda.
Me. Linda.
Yes, Linda.
Linda.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't have any cards yet or anything like that, but if you need to reach me, you know, the... email address, yeah, exactly. And I'd love to also get contact information
mm-hmm.
for the education.
Oh, great. You know what, let me give that to you now.
Oh, that would be great, yeah.
Her email address will be on my actuals.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to look for me and my husband. I don't know, they had interviewed me and my husband since Don joined the church. See that picture that's on my refrigerator?
What's that? Oh, yeah.
They chose me of Elvis Wimsu this summer.
Wow, you have such a gorgeous family. Your kids are adorable.
So there they are. But they chose us to be like poster children. They chose like five families to
uh-huh.
be like poster children for the church because they're starting this new... food stuff.
ad campaign blitz in the church because they have a new website, which you just went on, you know, with all the testimonies.
Oh, that's
and stuff.
A new website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It just came up
I
in May.
I love those multimedia things where the people are talking and just feel how they feel about
And they interviewed me and my husband to do that. And I don't know, I don't think we're on there yet. But they might not even put us on there.
Right.
But, and then they took did a photo shoot with me and my family. Hey, AOL. I'll tell you how much I'm just liking it right now. To do it. So look for us in magazine.
Yeah. What did they focus on for you guys?
Oh, for our interviews?
Yeah. Do you know, like, what section they're going to put you
in? You know what? Maybe? They might put us under morality. Under morality. Because it was like... And Don, too, his life was, he used the word counterfeit. He says, I thought things I were doing were real and fulfilling. And he was doing drugs and he was an alcoholic and he lived the party life. He lived that life.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I thought all of that was going to bring me happiness. And my, you know, he says, and none of it did. It was all counterfeit. Mm-hmm. That's what Satan wants you to believe. He said, it's all counterfeit. And that's what he talked about. And I kind of talked about that too, and just how hard it was. Same thing. But I would never leave the gospel. I think I brought up this point of is that no matter how far away from the church I would go in my behavior, that I never doubted that the church was true. Ever. I always knew in my heart because it always made me feel so good. You know, and that was. That was good. Little Bill. She's a lovely lady.
She's the state.
Yeah, she's the state education specialist.
Okay, and then there's a ward one too?
I don't think we have one right now.
Okay, yeah, Karen didn't mention anyone for your ward.
Because it was me, and then it was a guy that now is in.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely talked with me a lot about ego and teaching sessions. So, you know, if I end up, I don't know if you know if there's any tutoring programs going on now or anything like that.
I know maybe in some of the other wards there might be. I can ask around and find out if there is.
Oh, no, Karen definitely told me there were in the other wards, too. We're focusing mainly on this one. Yeah, because we are being we're doing a place-based study.
Great, yeah. There are. And we all, and someone, I just volunteered to tutor one of the kids that I, we kind of keep track. Nicholas is living with a school teacher and his wife, and they try to help as much as possible, but he just won't do his work. And the rest, I'm not really worried. I'm not worried about Jewel, and I'm not, Tanya's not in school, so I can't worry about her. The priest is doing great.
We really don't need it right now. Okay.
So if there's a need base,
then we set up. Okay, great, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
You're so church is great. We're kind of, you know, our meetings are tame compared to most churches in Harlem.
Okay.
They're very square.
Right.
And, but,
She got up and she was singing songs, dancing around, and we were hysterical and laughing so hard. But she's not a small woman, and the guys are sitting in back of her, and she's just like, her big booties just shaking and the whole thing. And it was just like, she's, and they finally tapped her. She was, I showed up like for 15 minutes. And they finally went,
yeah, we have others.
Aim it. Yeah. So it's colorful. Yeah. I can say that. It's fun. Right. It's, they're usually really good. Karen Borg just went last Sunday. It was nice. Last time we had passengers. So it's great.
Okay.
Well, thanks.
And is there anything like, let's see, anything that I need to know before I go and visit the church? Like, is there a certain, like, appropriate dress?
Don't wear dress. Okay. If you want. Skirt, blouse, doesn't matter.
Okay. Does it need to be a certain length or anything like that?
Okay. Oh, I get that. Because immodesty is something we try to completely. I mean, Tanya at one point was wearing, like, her boobs were just hanging out. And it's like, my girl, it's mostly with the teens.
Right.
You know. And they'll wear skirts split up to here, and I'm just like, you know what, sleeveless tank tops that are coming. I'm like, okay, let's put a sweater on.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, come on, you know. First of all, I don't want to look at it.
Yeah.
You know, and boys, you know, get embarrassed. They don't want to look at it, and it's just like, yeah, no, you'll be fine.
Okay. Great. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'll see you in about
That would be great. Yeah. Wow.
Okay. Take care. Good luck with your.